You're listening to Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat is Andrew Gaffney. Andrew Gaffney is the guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. Andrew is a La Liga journalist based in Valencia, which works out nicely for this particular episode. We will be talking about Valencia and Atletico. Those two teams played out a goalless draw at Mestalla on Saturday afternoon. It was a game of few chances, but a rather intense and intriguing game nonetheless. We'll have plenty to talk about, including key performances, both good and bad, Diego Simeone's team selection and tactics, and the early returns on Marcelino's project at Valencia. It seems to be going well for Los Che so far, considering their last two results. After the opening win at Las Palmas, they drew with Real Madrid and, of course, Atletico. Before we continue, a few housekeeping notes. On social media, you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. You can follow us on Twitter, @IntoTheCalderon. You can follow me personally, @JBBaron, J-B-B-E-R-E-N. And finally, head over to our Patreon page if you're interested in supporting the show, patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat. Lots of cool benefits to becoming a patron. Again, that address, patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat. We'll be back with Andrew Gaffney after this. Podcasting spot today. I'm outside a restaurant right now, close to an intersection, so hopefully the noise is not too much. I don't think it will be, but if it is, let me know.
No, I'm sure it is. I can hear you perfectly fine now, so excellent. I think we're good.
Yep, I can hear you clear as a bell. So, your first time on ColtGenneroChat. Great to have you on.
It is, yeah. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure.
Picking it up, yeah.
Before we start, I want to relate a story to you. I know you are a very active Twitter user, and I know how often you deal with idiots on Twitter. I dealt with a few myself over the weekend. I handle the Into the Calderon Twitter account. I tweet almost exclusively from there. Occasionally, Robbie or one of the other guys will chip in, but I do like 98% of the tweeting there. I changed the name, not the account name, but like our username from Into the Calderon to Into the Wanda, you know, because with the new stadium. And I got so much blowback for that. Like, I had one guy tell me, you know, I'll be back in 5 years when you're called Into the BMW. I'm like, okay, bye. Like, corporate sellout.
Yeah, I mean, people are sensitive, but I mean, I understand the reason behind changing it, but I also don't think there's not a need to change it either, I suppose, just because a lot of people still associate obviously the Calderon with Atletico Madrid, and because you've yet to play a game there, there's still that aura. But no, I mean, it's one of them sensitivity things that in a few weeks everyone forgets about it. I suppose that when any team moves stadium, I mean, like Spurs are obviously going to be in, people are calling it now, the new White Hart Lane, but we all know there's no chance it's going to be called White Hart Lane.
No way.
There'll be some big fat advertiser there because they end up paying a lot of money to have their name on the side of it. So it's an unfortunate side of football, but I understand sort of maybe the historians or the people that love that nostalgic feel of, to me, it'll always be the Calderon, even if it's the Wanda Metropolitano, it's called.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of how Twitter is. Take things so seriously. Just enjoy a joke. And, you know,
Twitter's a minefield. It really is a minefield of opinions and sort of exaggerations as well. I mean, I know you said I'm active, and I suppose, I don't know who I would compare myself to, say not, but probably since the end of last season to the sort of beginning of this, I've tried to use it less and less, and which is ridiculous because that's my biggest pull.
Right.
That's where I've got the biggest audience. But there is certain aspects of it, and the sort of everything's black and white. There's no grey.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything's exaggerated, and unfortunately, controversy sells. And I'm not one of them people that sort of can buy into that mentality. I prefer just to sort of say how it is and not make it sound like some sort of giant inquest that needs everybody and all the shock and horror of a certain decision or a certain, like the referees at the moment in Spain they've been terrible for years. But the thing is that they're only in the news when the big teams are sort of getting a few bad calls. As soon as they're getting the good calls, it disappears again, and you get the hypocrisy, same as like the El Clasico, which was announced, I think, was it this morning or last night? I think late last night, that it'll be the 23rd of December. And like all the other 18 teams don't even know who they're playing. It's like, oh yeah, we've got the date for El Clasico. But what about everybody else?
Yeah, no one cares about Eibar and Getafe. No one cares about the time of that game. No one cares if there's an offside decision that impacts that game. That's the problem.
It's a small bubble of only a certain teams matter when things go wrong.
Yeah.
Same as like obviously Neymar's transfer. You can have the moral criticism of it, but the Galactico era, no one really sort of said, wow, Real Madrid is spending all this money on certain players. If Neymar's gone, Neymar's gone. But there was no protection when they were robbing a player from Sevilla or robbing a player from Valencia. It's just one of them very hypocritical things that, unfortunately, if you go to an extreme on one side, so if you're like very pro Real Madrid or very pro Barcelona, you draw up a massive following, but then you obviously immediately alienate 50% of the casual fan base. So staying in the middle is sometimes difficult. And if you do say anything that sways slightly to one side, you're immediately accused of bias. You're obviously a Barcelona fan, or you're obviously a Real Madrid fan. It's like neither, genuinely neither.
Yeah, I think we're both in the same boat there. These are just some of the problems I have. I like to kind of pick my spots when I tweet, because like you said, there is no gray area. And like, I can't get involved in those fights, you know? I just can't. It's bad for the brand.
It's bad for the brand. You sound like Trump. Everything's a brand. But no, it is true that it's I'm someone who's very, I'll sort of say it how I see it, which can work and it can also not work. And and Twitter is one of them places that I think you can get absorbed and you can just literally waste hours on there. And I think sort of a couple of years ago was the transfer window. I don't think I switched off a form of communication to Twitter. And if there was a bit of news or if there was an interview or a picture came of somebody in an airport, and you just sort of thought, really? Really? That's what I'm doing? Forget it. It's not worth it. It's not worth the hassle.
Is this my life now? What happened?
You end up being sort of like the TMZ reporter for every random rumor, which unfortunately sells, but that's another story for another day.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is. Well, let us move on then. I like to start these with a little La Liga whip around, going through all the scores and just talking like in capsules briefly about the games that happened this weekend. As usual, an interesting weekend in La Liga, very rarely disappoints. On Friday, we had the first ever South Madrid derby. I was very excited for this game, and it didn't disappoint. Leganés 1, Getafe 2. Getafe scoring golazos, Andrew. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, well, Getafe, one of them teams that have a very enriched reputation of being quite boring, quite dull. And I think when you're in a city as big as Madrid that have got two massive clubs, it's easy for them to be forgotten about. And sometimes it can play in their hands, and I think the start of the season's done that, because no one's expecting much from them. Nobody gave them a chance of being promoted in the first season, so I think they're playing with that freedom of that there's no pressure on their backs at the moment, which is nice to see, because I think it's always nice to see underdogs disproving the theories. And obviously Leganés came into the game in good form, so for Getafe to pick up a win is significant, and is another sort of itching closer to safety, because that will be their objective this season.
Yeah, through three games, just Leganés conceded just two goals, and they were both absolutely stunning goals from Getafe. Amar Bari got the first one, Jimenez the second one, just about 7 minutes from time. Good result for Getafe, and Leganés, not really too much discouraging from them in this performance. They're off to a fine start. Obviously very early days, but we'd love to see them get to stay up again. It'd be a massive achievement if they got a third year in La Liga, but that's definitely far in the future. On Saturday, very controversial game at the Bernabeu. Real Madrid 1, Levante 1. Lots to dissect here. Marcelo's red card, Benzema's injury. Are you worried about Madrid, Andrew? Worried at all?
I think think it's always dangerous to make sweeping opinions based on so little time.
Yeah.
And especially on the back of an international break, it was clear that Zidane was trying to rotate his side to keep him fresh for the Champions League, obviously, this week. But I think he did get it wrong. He'll probably admit later the system didn't really work. The personnel weren't bad players. I don't think Real Madrid can pick a bad team, even if they tried. But it just didn't work, and Benzema's sort of injury helped them rejig it a little bit to be a more natural system, but it just didn't sort of click all game. They had a lot of dominance, but didn't really create too much, and when they did create the chances, they went begging. There were sort of half chances as opposed to sort of a real one, and Marcelo can't have any complaints. It was pure frustration to kick out there, and I think there's always an uproar about refereeing decisions, but he got it completely right, and I think much as no one will admit it, it was a clear red card, and just an example of how frustrating that game had become for Real Madrid, because last season, especially at the back end when the B team sort of took over in the league because Real Madrid were focusing more on the Champions League, it was that late sort of rally where Isco would pull something special out of the bag or Asensio would, and it just wasn't coming, and I think Marcelo's reaction was just frustration that he couldn't sort of get past that last man or get that cross in.
Levante, though, these guys are like cockroaches, haven't lost yet. Evie scoring again after turning Danny Carvajal completely around. That was a wild goal. And Jefferson Lerma played really well in midfield. Raul made several awesome saves.
I think if you'd have told Levante fans at the start of the season after three games they'd be on equal points with Real Madrid, unbeaten, they'd snap your hand off.
Sevilla 3, Eibar 0. Sevilla coming out of the international break looking more and more like a Berizzo team.
Yeah, I mean, Sevilla are a really strange team. I think that sort of qualifiers really shook up establishing a system, and I think the heavy rotations has meant that in a lot of games they've had to sacrifice at least 45 minutes of cohesive play because they need to adapt to new personnel, new systems, has changed formations. So the first half was sort of very forgettable, but then Sevilla have that individual quality which over the course of 90 minutes usually can get you victories, and they're another team that you look at their sort of points total after three games, they were top of the table momentarily after that victory over Eibar, but there's only two teams ahead of them that have won obviously all three games. So Sevilla, it's interesting. Again, I don't want to draw too many conclusions just yet, because I think that there's a lot to sort of work out, and what's the best 11, how they're going to manage the Champions League, are they going to prioritise a bit the Champions League just to get out of the groups. But yeah, I think with the new guys, obviously for Nolito to score, I know he's out of the squad for the game against Liverpool with injury, but it's important for him for his confidence, because he's not looked the Nolito that was at Celta Vigo, mm-hmm. and maybe the one that was at Manchester City for maybe the first two or three months, where I thought he looked really good and then he lost his place and never looked like getting it back. Jesus Navas is someone who's settled a lot quicker, and it's important that he establishes himself in the team, and then they get this, the main striker, obviously Ben Yedder has had a really good start to the season, but they've made a record signing of Luis Muriel, who you assume is their ideal first choice striker, but he had a tough game in his debut, and then he had, I think, some sort of international issue. He went on international duty and then he stayed an extra day there to sort out some paperwork. But yeah, for Sevilla, I think the most important thing at the start of the season is just to pick up the points and get a good start in the Champions League as well.
Barcelona 5, Espanyol 0. I have nothing to say about Barcelona, but I do want to talk about Espanyol very briefly. I have major problems with them. What was this performance? Like, they let, first of all, they let Barca score from a corner, which they never do. And seriously, you let Barcelona score from a corner. You know, Messi was great, all that jazz, but what was the game plan for Espanyol? What were they doing? Like, the Catalan Derby had at least been mildly competitive. This was just embarrassing.
It's difficult, again, to sort of really judge where they are, and I think as much as they've been classified as a difficult team, usually the result ends up going Barcelona's way. I mean, I think last season, they lost 5-0 and 4-1. No, it was a 4-1 and 3-0, I think. And then they've obviously lost 5-0 this game. No, Espanyol didn't even turn up. I think as much as Lionel Messi was incredible, and he has the ability to just sort of turn it on and be unplayable, Espanyol made it far too easy for Barcelona.
On to Sunday, Deportivo 2, Real Sociedad 4. Great performance from La Real, two late goals, including Yarramendi scoring a goal I never thought I would see him score, dribbling through basically the entire defense.
I didn't admittedly sort of watch the full game. It was on in the background and I kept looking across, and when I saw Real Sociedad were 2-0 up, I was like, wow. And I was quite impressed with Deportivo in the opening weekend against Real Madrid, because I thought, at least attacking wise, I think they've got one of the best or most underrated attacks in the league.
Oh,
the problem is that the defence is so poor, and it's still that sort of soft underbelly, and it's the Achilles heel, that if you don't have a very good defence and you're leaking goals, you need that strike force to score. And I think to get two against Real Sociedad, that's impressive. But what's not impressive is to concede four. And Iramendi was incredible, probably one of the best games he's had in since he's returned. And he's had a lot of good games, but he showed a little bit more. I think Marco called him a box-to-box Iramendi, which is not usually what you associate with him.
So right.
He's a little bit more reserved, is the one pulling the strings. But there was definitely an edge to sort of attacking play, like I said, when darting through three or four challenges. And he got lucky with the finish, but I mean, sometimes the runs deserve that bit of luck just to sort of make it a golazo as opposed to just a goal. And Real Sociedad, another team, they look really good so far.
Athletic 2, Girona 0. Athletic with a pretty easy win. I would, maybe not easy, but comfortable win. Iker Muniain opening his goal scoring chart for the season. Aritz Adari is doing what he has always done and will do for the next 15 years.
Yeah, I think
Athletic look good too. No goals conceded for them in 3 weeks.
Yeah, Iñaki Williams and Muniain, who's continuing his fantastic form from last year. Adaris, who's, I want to see his birth certificate. It's one of them people you don't believe is the age he says he is. It's so good, and it's natural. It's someone that you can tell that he's not being taught anything. It's just how he sort of plays the game. He's got like a sixth sense of where the ball's going, and I think they're a really good team. They're really solid. I think for Girona, their home form's key for them staying up.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to do much on the road. I think they can maybe make it competitive at times, but I think more often than not they're going to get caught up and end up losing.
Alaves, they lost at Celta 1-0. Maxi Gomez scoring again for Celta, but Alaves, no goals through 3 weeks. I know it's too early to make these kinds of generalizations, but I think they're kind of screwed already. I think they're in bad shape.
Yeah, my sort of like roundup piece that I did today for Yahoo, I said it looks really difficult for them to see any hope. I think they brought in some decent players. The problem is that last year it was held up by Marcos Llorente in the middle, who was so good for them. And they had Davison, who's not everyone's cup of tea, but he gets himself about and he offers a goal threat. And I think Alaves, that's the one thing this year, and I know it's easy to say when they've not scored a goal, but they don't look like scoring a goal. You
right.
can say sometimes teams have had a bit of bad luck, or you're in the post, or you get into the good positions and it's just not going your way, but Alaves are often literally nothing. It's almost sort of demoralising, especially after last year, which was such a fairy tale season. I mean, Malaga are on them teams that you assume they're too good to go down. If you've watched them in the opening three games, they're definitely not too good to go down. They look,
I think they could be dragged into it. I really do. And they lost 3-1 to Las Palmas today. Las Palmas, who got wrecked by Atletico before the international break. Las Palmas, who are missing Vitolo and aren't that good. So, yeah, Malaga are hurting right now. The final two more results. The last game, the late game Sunday, was Villarreal 3, Real Betis 1. Betis, still a work in progress, definitely. Villarreal get their first one of the season. Carlos Bacca scores his first goal since his return to Spain. Samu Castillejo scoring one of the goals of the weekend, I thought. With that dipping shot.
Really confident finish, yeah.
Yeah, I've been on his hype train since he was at Malaga.
Yeah, it's frustratingly inconsistent is what I would refer to, which is normal with a young player. They're expected to sort of dip in and out of form, but you can see the natural talents there. Betis are a really difficult team, because I always say every year, I think, they signed really well. They seem to bring in exactly what the squad needs, but then it doesn't sort of work. And I mean, against Villarreal, the first goal they conceded was just comical with Zidane's footwork. Of all the people on the pitch that you could give the ball to, Carlos Bacca is the last person you want to give it. And it obviously, it just... I think it's disappointing. I still think Betis will eventually click, and I think Setien's a good manager. But they're definitely the sort of victims of their own downfall at the moment. Even, I mean, they obviously got the victory against Celta Vigo. Villarreal, again, similar to, I would say, Sevilla. They've not really started yet. I think, obviously, having to play away from home the first two games is never easy. Similar to Atletico, they asked for the special permission to get it a bit longer, so with the international break, it'll be ready. They played the first game there, and they won. So, I think Villarreal just needed that, I think. A little bit of a confidence booster. They look good, I think, apart from the gifts from Betis, and obviously the special power from Castillejo. I think Villarreal will be where we expect them to be, fighting around 4th, 5th, 6th spot.
Now, the one result we did not mention, which we will do so now, the only goalless game of the weekend, Valencia 0, Atletico 0, Andrew. And just because it was goalless doesn't mean that things didn't happen. This was a really intense game, and we'll talk about Valencia in a minute. As you are based in Valencia, I know that is your specialty. But from the Atletico point of view, good result?
Yeah, I think it's one of those games that both teams wouldn't openly admit it before the game, but they were happy to take a point. There's moments where sort of one takes the initiative and the other one sort of on the back foot. But over the course of the game, it was literally about as even as a football match over 90 minutes as it could be. And I think the Simeone, Mestalla is not an easy place to go to. Last year and maybe the previous year, it lost that aura of being a difficult place, and the fans turned on the team, so they lost that backing, which is so important. This year, I don't think anyone's going to get an easy game in Mestalla. So to take a point is by no means sort of anything to feel ashamed of. I think they deserved at least a point. And I think Simeone will can't fault any of the effort from the players as well. I think they're putting a good shift. It was just literally two teams cancelling each other out.
Yeah, and this usually happens against Marcelino teams because they're just so hard to beat. Like, you have one small window in which to score, and if you don't take it, you're not going to score. And Atletico had so many like half chances and like quarter chances, and those are always tough to convert, especially when you don't have Griezmann in the team, which makes this result, I think, a little more understandable.
I mean, obviously, Marcelino is similar to Simeone in that he's very structured, he's very disciplinary, and he sets up his team. Obviously, they both play a version of a 4-4-2, which means that very solid in the middle. Everyone can drop back, and it can be very difficult to break down. And I think, throughout the game, when Valencia took control, Atletico seemed to, I would say out of the two, maybe Atletico's defence looked stronger. I mean, I can't remember Oblak having to make a save, to be honest.
He did not make one. Valencia had 11 shots, nil on target.
and obviously Neto made a couple of really smart stops, but again, nothing you wouldn't expect him not to save.
Right.
It was just a game that I think was two well-organised sides, but neither that were desperate to sort of take a chance and possibly lose the game. For Valencia, it's important to maintain, especially at home, that sort of record going in. For Atletico, I think it's important not to lose. Obviously, they had a scare against Girona. Not having Griezmann around is always a worry. Las Palmas was essentially a walk along the beach. It was far too easy. And this was more like the bread and butter of the teams that are going to be challenging Atletico. And away from home, I think a point again at Mestalla is more than respectable.
A lot of teams are going to struggle to get points there this year.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the team, you would say, like, the first 11 is really strong. There's still question marks over the squad, like if Kondogbia picked up an injury, immediately you recognise that there's a weakness in that midfield. But if everyone more or less stays fit, and obviously no European football, which helps that rotation policy a little bit, but it's less important, should we say, with more on the wide men. There's going to be very few teams that go to Mustaire and turn them over. There's not going to be any. Well, I don't envisage there to be massive score lines like we've seen in previous years. There's an organisation, a structure there. And defensively, they look really solid.
I mean, yes, they do.
Again, an Atletico without Griezmann is not the same as an Atletico with Griezmann. You know that he offers something special. But it's not like you had bad players on the pitch. Obviously, Carrasco, you had Koke, you had Correa, who's had a really good start to the season, although I didn't think he was at his best, nor was Bieto, to be fair. But, you know, there's some really solid attacking options there, but Valencia sort of dealt with it quite well. But the biggest chances, I think, when you look at the game objectively, the biggest chances fell to Atletico and they didn't take them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would have been harsh on Valencia to have not at least walked away with a point. But again, that's what Atletico maybe need to be. They need to be a little bit more efficient when those big chances do fall their way, not to let teams off the hook.
Yeah, the two best chances came on either side of halftime. Vieto had a header toward the end of the first half that he didn't hit it very well, and it sailed away kind of harmlessly. And then after Nico Gaitán came on about the hour mark, he had a really good opportunity that Neto had to dive down and save for a corner. And that was really about it. I mean, it was very, very even. Atletico were excellent defensively, but this is a game to build on for a guy like Stefan Savic, for a guy like Juan Fran, for Lucas Hernandez. These are games to build on.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that the Godin didn't play, and even more so if Jimenez as well been on the bench. Gabby, I think it's normal that he's been, should we say, ushered out of the team in a respectful way, because obviously Thomas's start to the season has been really good. Yeah. Saul, we know how good he is. There should be less emphasis on needing someone like Gabby, who is important, I think, to have around the club, but is not exactly what you need now. Because Simeone is always building for the future. He likes that blend of experience and youth. And I think, like you say, it's a big slap on the back in terms of responsibility for Savic and Hernandez to get the nod over the sort of arguably first choice or on paper the best two centre-backs at the club. And they did well. They didn't put a foot wrong all game. They were very rarely tested. And I think that's part as well because Valencia's weakness is attack, which last year was probably defence. This year it's attack. Zaza, I think, is a good striker. I think he works really hard. He puts a shift in. He never stops running. He is a handful for defenders. It's that second position that the person who's playing either just to the side of him or just behind, which was Rodrigo Moreno, didn't look that good. And
yeah.
I think it's a confidence thing. I mean, I mentioned it on the famous Twitter, but he has a little bit of an air of Soldado when he went to Spurs that is almost doubting that he's going to score goals. So he's just trying to sort of build up play and cross and play the pass into someone else. He doesn't feel like someone who's going to take the game by the scruff of the neck and score three or four goals. Is always looking to give it to somebody else. And I think when you're in that role, and Valencia now have more options in that position, you need to offer a bit more. And more against a team like Atletico Madrid, we know we're not going to give you many chances. You're going to have to offer two attacking threats and not just one. Because if it's only Zaza, it's just going to get marked out of the game.
I do think that is the biggest thing Valencia are lacking. They need a little bit more quality up top. But other than that, I think this is certainly a result to build on, as the Real Madrid result was. I really like their summer. They reinforced in midfield, reinforced in defense. Andreas Pereira, Gonzalo Guedes are both really solid acquisitions, going to improve their depth from wide. Marcelino is building something here.
Yeah, well, I think the one thing that Valencia's always had, even through the bad times of the last 18 months and 2 years, it feels like it's been going forever.
It does.
The academy products are actually getting a chance again. And the one thing Marcelino does, and he did it at Villarreal so well, is that he's someone who's a very avid follower of the youth setup. He goes to the games, he has a good relationship with the coaches, and if he sees someone that he thinks fits into his system, they'll say, don't send them out there, I want them here. If there's a cup game or something like that, and you've seen the chances given to Nacho Vidal, obviously Lato on the left-hand side, which is played there against Real Madrid, with Gaia further forward. And I think there's that basis of the young players now believe if I play well, I'm going to get a chance. Obviously, Carlos Soler as well as the most famous one to come out in the past sort of 6 to 12 months. Parejo now is being sort of liberated with Kondogbia sitting in there and shielding, so he doesn't have to focus on defending, which is definitely something that he's not very good at. But what he is good at is if he's given 5 yards of space, he can pick a fantastic ball out. So there's a team there, which is what's unfortunately been lacking for a club that's as big as Valencia to not have a structured, functioned team. It's a big problem. And Marcelino, and that's the one thing he's going to bring in, is managed to get a lot of wages off the books, which was really important because they were spending far too much. They maybe lost some money on transfers, but wages was a thing that was crippling their sort of bank balance. And there's room there for improvement in January, and I think if they're anywhere near the top sort of 5 or 6, which you would hope, I'm not saying they would definitely be there, but there's a chance if it continues to click that they can invest and maybe bring in someone, and maybe another forward option who can sort of beef up that attack and make it a more complete side.
As for Atletico in this game, I did notice a few things, especially in the absence of Griezmann. It emphasized a few facets of this game. First of all, though, I read this in Marca this morning. Gabby had not been a substitute in back-to-back games since 2007 until this past weekend.
Wow.
10 years he's gone.
I think that just shows the importance of what he brings to the side. Unless he's injured, he's usually a key component of the team. And he does bring a lot, I think. As much as there's a lot of youth and drive there, his leadership and that sort of grittiness that he brings to the midfield is important. But there also comes a time where you need to look towards the future, and if these kids that are coming through are ready to play and they're good enough to play, well, then you need to play them. And I think that, again, similar to what happened to Real Madrid, possibly the transfer bans are a blessing for people like that, because it's possible someone like Thomas would have been loaned out, or possibly loaned out, not definitely, but possibly loaned out. But because of them forced to keep what they've got, he's been given an opportunity and he's running with it, to be fair. No one can complain. I think probably one of the best players on the pitch again against Valencia. And he offers what Gabby does, but he also offers a little bit more. I think in the attacking third, it's a better striker of the ball, shall we say, than Gabby, although that's obviously not the role that's expected of him.
I do think Gabby is still going to play the majority of the big games, at least for now. Like, he's almost certainly going to start against Roma on Tuesday. But Tomas is rapidly kind of closing in on Gabby and his role. Tomas has been brilliant the first two games. He's emerging as a counterattacking conduit because he is just so good at intercepting the ball. And we've showered praise on him on this podcast before. But I think he's getting close to, and Simeone's starting to realize it too, he's getting close to taking Gabby's spot.
Yeah, well, I think someone like Simeone, that's what he sort of inspires of these young players. He doesn't want them to give up and complain and say, well, if I don't get my first team football, I'd go in. Obviously, Lucas Hernandez was linked with Manchester City.
Yeah.
And there was the theory that if the ban was overturned, that he would have gone. But I think what Simeone does is similar to what Marcelino does, but obviously Simeone has a longer lineage with one club, is that it gives people opportunities to make it there. So no one can say that they, well, apart from was it Hotter that went out on loan that's never played a game, but everyone that he's wanted to bring in, or anyone who's seen in the youth academy that's sort of been on the peripheries of the first team, all of them have been given an opportunity to sort of demonstrate whether they're good enough. Some of them have sort of shined and they kept the place. Others have sort of gone back to the bench and played more of a rotational role, and some have just not made the grade. But I think that's the one thing that inspires youngsters, that maybe feel that they've got the backing of the managers, that know they're going to get a run at some point, and it's down to them to sort of demonstrate they're good enough. And Thomas is somebody I think has shown that is definitely good enough to start this year. I think similar to sort of Saul when he came through, that he initially was more on the wing, and then it became like it's obviously better in a central area, so they pushed Koke, who was arguably the star player behind Griezmann at that time, out wide, and it keeps them compact. But you know, I think that's the the uniqueness of Atletico Madrid. Simeone creates like drones of himself.
Yes, he does.
Young players that literally will fight for every single ball, and that's what he wants. He doesn't care if you're maybe the best technically, or if you can sort of ping a 50-yard ball perfectly to the feet of the opposing sort of winger. He wants you to literally give everything on that pitch, and that's what he creates. He creates warriors and people. That's why they're so difficult to break down. And I think defensively, can't remember what game it was. It might have been Las Palmas, where they looked a little bit shaky in defense. Obviously, Girona as well. They didn't start well, but against Valencia, there was definitely that Atletico of old in terms of the back line, and that's what their success is built on, being a team that's very difficult to break down. And when they do get their own opportunities on the counter-attack, and I think Griezmann obviously adds a lot to that because he's so industrious. I mean, people forget how much he works for that team. He scores a lot of goals, but most games in the 85th minute is back defending. It's sort of further back than some of the centre-backs. He literally desperately does everything to make sure his side hold on to it. Onto a lead or have an opportunity to create another, launch another counter attack. So, yeah, I think the structure of Atletico is what we always expect, but it's just blooding through some younger players, which is necessary. I mean, even like Juanfran, I do think this is the year, maybe similar to Gabby, that is slowly pushed out of the team.
Yeah,
I know he's a fan favourite and he's got his own little legacy there, but I don't think he should be first choice. Maybe, like you say, similar to Gabby in the big games, someone who may be a bit more experienced is going to sit there and he knows the role is a bit of a veteran. He knows how the games are played and he keeps his head. Similar to, like, obviously Torres is being phased out already. He's only there because of a transfer ban.
Yeah, and but Torres came on and I think his substitution changed the game. Not really in a good way. And he slowed everything down. And his first touch was really just heavy, and he didn't single-handedly do it, but he had a hand in kind of eliminating some of the best counterattacks that Letty had in the latter stages of the game. His introduction slowed everything down, I thought.
Yeah, it was really weird, I think, because the forward line of Correa and Vieto is like the complete opposite, the polar opposite of Fernando Torres and Kevin Gamero. And there was a period where Valencia were dominating for, I think, like 25 minutes of literally penning Atletico back. And then Atletico had 10 minutes themselves where they created chance after chance. And then, like you say, without that real good outlet in attack, it allowed Valencia to be more confident to deal with it and then take the initiative again towards the end, which I think is a problem. I think without Griezmann, and I still think Correa is going to be very good this year, I think there's a lack of quality there. I can understand why he wanted Diego Costa, and he might still get Diego Costa, but obviously he's not going to play till January. But there is a little bit of weakness when it comes to the system that he prefers, which is 4-4-2. Someone to play with Griezmann will be the same problem, I think. Angel Correa, I'm not sure if he's the perfect foil.
Yeah,
but I guess we'll see.
Correa fits more. I'm starting to think he fits more as a Griezmann replacement rather than a Griezmann complement.
Definitely.
Gamero doesn't really fit there either, because he and Griezmann have very similar characteristics. They have good chemistry, but long term, Griezmann and Gamero are very similar players. That's why Simeone has been chasing Costa like relentlessly for basically the past 2 years. And there's quality on that front line. It just may not be the right type of quality, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, they're still recognizable names, and you'd imagine in other teams in La Liga or in England, they get goals. The problem is, like we said, trying to find that one who fits with Griezmann, and then if the planning was, well, Griezmann's going, so we need to create a new forward line, which would be maybe Diego Costa and Angel Correa, you could see that working. But with Griezmann staying and obviously Costa not being available, it sort of made it the same system as last year. But the best complement to him, you would probably say, is Fernando Torres. But you don't really want to be playing Fernando Torres if you want to be challenging for the major trophies in world football, because yes, he is a legend and it is an obviously special place in the heart of all Atletico Madrid fans. Still some Liverpool fans, the ones that have forgiven him for the Chelsea move.
Yeah.
It's just not, for my money, the quality that you'd expect from someone at a team as big as Atletico Madrid. That's why I think it's imperative near, or should I say in contention in January, so that when, again, we're all talking hypothetically, but it looks like it will happen, Diego Costa is available, because then I think him alongside Griezmann is good enough to not only challenge in La Liga, but also maybe finally win that elusive Champions League, which seems almost cursed at the moment.
Let's hope.
As long as you don't play Real Madrid, I think you're okay. Yeah, you beat everybody else. It's just
really
the curse of Real Madrid.
The last team that beat Atletico was Rubin Kazan in the Europa League in 2013. Like, just avoid Real Madrid.
It's literally that. But, yeah, it's the one area that does need improving, I think, sort of long-term. And that explains exactly why Diego Simeone was chasing another striker.
Yeah.
Just because Torres... I don't think he'd really trust Gamero, and I'm almost 100% sure if he could have bought and sold, Gamero would not be there. There's no slant, really, on Gamero. I just don't think he's worked as Simeone expected him to. But there needs to be that little bit of extra quality alongside Griezmann. Angel Correa is good, but it's similar to you. I think he's more of a replacement or more of a wide option.
Yeah.
If you're going to play him in the same team as Griezmann, but you don't play the two of them up top together. So it's a conundrum up to the January, but you would imagine even without Diego Costa potentially there's still enough about that Atletico side to be in the hunt for second or third, and you would imagine they're going to qualify from the Champions League groups as well.
Yeah,
not easy, but you do.
Disaster.
Which should leave them in a good position that, as long as Diego Costa's in good form, maintains his fitness, which you would imagine he would, because there's still a World Cup there. But that could be the impetus that makes them from a very good team to a great team, or a very difficult team for opponents to sort of break down.
Let's hope. I do want to talk about one more player. It's Koke. Now, Koke has become increasingly complicated, at least in my eyes, in the past maybe 9 months or so. Last season, he was really inconsistent, and we kind of saw a little bit more of that on Saturday. I don't think he had a very good game, and he had 117 touches, which I think is way too many for him. He took up 10% of Atleti's touches in total. Against Las Palmas, it was less than 5% of all of Atleti's touches. He was out on the wing again. He changed sides in the second half as Simeone tried to give Valencia a different look and trying to pick them apart. Koke, it's he has to strike a specific balance in order to be at his very best. He can't have that many touches, I don't think, because he's not creative enough. Despite his assists totals, he's not a number 10. He can't really play in the middle because Atleti are a bit softer defensively and less compact when he is there, and he doesn't have as much protection. So what did you make of Koke's performance and just kind of the inconsistency from week to week? Against Las Palmas, before the international break, he was brilliant, scored two amazing goals. And against Valencia, he had a lot of touches but didn't do a whole lot with them.
Yeah, I think I understand why sort of fans will love him, but at the same time be frustrated by him. He didn't really do anything against Valencia. And I know it might sound harsh, but I think he's a player that is also living off a reputation that's maybe a little bit higher than he actually deserves. I think he's a very good player, but I don't think is the guy that was supposed to be taken over from Iniesta in the Spanish team.
Yeah,
it's not lived up to that.
No way.
He had this sort of conception that he was on the brink of becoming world class, but I don't think he's actually ever crossed that line. I still think, like I say, he's a very good player, but it's frustrating. I don't think he's found his ideal place. I think he's obviously been shifted out to the wing, but he's not a winger. He's not a wide man. He's someone who likes to drift inside. He likes to pick up those pockets of spaces and cause damage. And against Las Palmas, it was incredible, but Las Palmas were literally like a boxer who didn't have a guard. It was just, you could take any shot you wanted and he was going to hit. So I think there definitely needs to be improvement. I think it's somebody that, again, is a really fundamental part of how Simeone likes his players to perform. I think it works really hard for the team, tracks back. It definitely sort of doesn't shirk any responsibility, but you want him to be the game changer. In games which are tough, which no team's given an inch, you would expect Koke, who was probably the biggest name that was playing for Atletico Madrid at the weekend, to step up and sort of run the show a little bit and take these younger ones and say, look, give the ball to me. Don't worry, Koke will save the day. And he didn't really do that. He just became like another player on the pitch.
Yeah, I think his biggest issue is that sometimes he just doesn't have that personality, that kind of follow me character. He wore the captain's band. He's going to be the future captain. You don't give him a contract to 2024 and not expect him to be your future captain. But that's kind of an issue. He doesn't always take a leadership role. He doesn't always take the kind of midfield general role. And I think that's something he needs to improve on.
Yeah, I mean, I still think like 4-4-2 maybe is not the best formation as well to get the maximum out of him. Because
I agree. I think he would flourish in a 4-3-3.
Yeah, it needs two people next to him in that centre that he's got a bit more license to roam. A bit similar to like Parejo for Valencia. He needs to be freed of certain responsibilities so we can focus on one. And I think when you shove him out wide, it limits what he can do. And if he does drift inside, then it puts a lot of pressure on the fullback if there's a counterattack. So there needs to be, I mean, I don't know. I think when you look at Koke and you say, well, he can still improve. I mean, he's only 25. It's not like we're talking about a 28-year-old who's sort of reached, peaked, and you're not going to get what you expected to. There's still the potential there for him to kick on and become a really sort of world-class midfielder. But I think the system is something which doesn't really work for him, and that's something that Simeone needs to work at. I would imagine when Griezmann's fit, it's possible that you'd see someone like Correa move out wide, and then Koke can sort of fit into a midfield three, and it leaves Griezmann as a lone striker with Carrasco and Correa sort of either side of Antoine. So, yeah, I think he's a victim maybe of a formation that doesn't suit his strengths, and it sometimes exposes him.
I mean, this may not happen until January, even. I mean, Simeone is going to tinker and rotate until then, but I think he probably is, but in January you're going to have Vitolo come, you're probably going to have Costa come, and that will lend itself to more tactical variety. I'm excited for Vitolo because I think Vitolo is so versatile. You can play him pretty much anywhere. He can fit really in any system. That's going to offer Cholo a lot more options. But until then, it's going to be mostly, I think, more of the same. You might see a bit more 4-3-3. You're going to see more younger players getting time. Like, you're going to see a lot more Tomas, probably a fair amount of Vieto as well. Defensively, there are going to be shifts from week to week between certain players, but I think that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's one of them things where you say it's a good problem for a manager to have.
It is.
When you look at like Zidane, and yeah, maybe the rotation was wrong at the weekend, but the fact that he can afford to rotate that well just shows the strength in depth. And I think Atletico Madrid, the one thing that when you compare the two teams, is there's been the first 11 of Atletico Madrid has arguably been in the last two or three years one of the best, or at least second best, if not the best at one point, first 11 in the league. It's the squad depth which has let them down. And I think if you bring in Vitolo, it adds an extra dimension. If you can bring in Diego Costa as well and keep Griezmann at least until the end of the season, obviously you don't envisage selling him in January because that would be just crazy.
Yeah.
But it adds extra options. You've got like Carrasco and Angel Carrillo on the right. You got Vitolo, you got Griezmann who can play on the wing as well. You can have Diego Costa as the main striker. There's lots of options in it, and they're solid options, and it's not like you're immediately weakening the team. It's still strong, but using different personnel in different systems, and I think that's what Simeone wants. He's obviously trying to get the most out of what he's got, and it's still a very good squad overall, but they're lacking a little bit, I think, of extra quality in the final third. Even like Carrasco, I mean, I love Carrasco, but he's also someone who has moments where he's brilliant and then it makes you pull your hair out in the next moment. Mm-hmm. Because he's missing easy chances or one-on-ones, or he doesn't beat his man, or he tries to do sort of fancy flick and he loses the ball. But they're the options you want to have. You want to have someone like Carrasco being pushed, that it's not guaranteed a place in the side. Similar to Koke as well, I imagine is a player that will adapt to competition. And, well, okay, you're not going to play on the right now because we've got Vitolo, Winnie, Danco, Correa that can play there as well. And you're not going to play on the left because we've got Carrasco and Griezmann in certain games that are going to play out wide. So he's forced to say, step up his game and prove to Simeone that it's worth his place in the ideal 11 for Atletico Madrid. And I think that can only be a good thing for the whole squad.
I think Carrasco needs his hair back. I think that's the problem.
Like David Silva has lost his powers.
Like, what is this trend? I don't like it. He needs his hair back.
I don't think anyone apart from David Silva understands the reason why he cut his hair. It's literally created more headlines than what he's done on the pitch. It's like,
yeah, headlines.
David Silva.
No pun intended.
Yeah, literally.
Well, that is all I got for you today, Andrew. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on.
Great talking to you. A really good debut appearance, I gotta say. One of the best in recent memory. Top
don't
flight.
Inflate the ego.
I'll ask you to stand for just a minute while I do the sign-off message. That is Andrew Gaffney. You can follow him on Twitter at GaffneyVLC. You can follow me at JBBaren, JBBEREN. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. You can subscribe and listen to Colt Gennaro Chat on your favorite podcasting platform. And check out our Patreon page if you want to support the show. Patreon.com/Colt Gennaro Chat. We'll be back later in the week to talk about Atletico and Roma. Until then, adios.